Welcome into a new episode of the Calling It Podcast, recording Thursday, April 9th, just past the 2 o'clock hour here in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz, who is sequestered down in Houston. We are powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, this is quarantine episode 3, 4?
Two. Right? No, I think this is quarantine episode 2.
No way. Because yeah. We did the one the day after everything hit the fan, right? There was that Wednesday night where everything closed down. Remember, they stopped the NBA games, all that. So we did one then. We did one last week.
Oh, you're right. It is 3 or 4.
It was like 5. And then we did back-to-back during NFL free agency.
You're right. I was thinking about furloughed episodes. I got them confused. Oh,
furloughed episode 2, quarantine episode 5. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Are you any less bored yet?
No, I'm still very bored, and my boredom increases exponentially by each passing day. So, you know, it is what it is. Again, I thank God for MLB The Show. I'm still somewhat invested in that game. I'm trying to, you know, catch up with Better Call Saul. I'm going to pick up The Sopranos soon, and I'm watching movies a lot. So I can kill time. I'm a homebody. This is kind of my element, but even for me, this is brutal. It's kind of like the grass is always greener. I don't like going out, but now that I can, I really want to. So hopefully this passes, and, you know, who knows? I don't even know. I have no hope.
I feel that. My roommate got me hooked on Grand Theft Auto Online, and that's been a ton of fun, but, like, I'm already sort of bored of it. So I started playing, like, a week ago. I started playing last Tuesday, so I'm playing for less than 10 days, and I already have an attack helicopter, a flying DeLorean, a military bunker, like stuff that, like, it's supposed to take you like months of playing to buy.
Yeah. I beat it.
So I'm playing a little NCAA football 14, but as fun as that game, as fun as a college football game is, like, you forget how much, like, in terms of playability, that game sucked.
Yes. The fun part about that game for me is building up, a coach, like starting as an OC at UMass and then going from that to being the head coach at Florida State. That's the fun part. And recruiting, scouting, doing all that good stuff. And also the road to glory mode on that game is awesome. Yeah. But the games themselves, when you're playing, like, the actual game, yeah, it's not great. I mean, you're going to get more out of that.
The linebackers can jump 30 feet in the air, pick the ball off.
Yes. Yeah.
And the graphics are just horrible.
Yeah. There's one clip where there was a quarterback being sacked, and he was like on his back, but his elbows hadn't touched the ground yet. And he literally threw it from his back, and his head was facing the receiver. It was just impossible. It was funny to watch, but, like, there are glitches in that game, and you do notice that when you do the throwbacks.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we'll get into it. We'll start with the Tom Brady, Howard Stern interview. I'll be honest, straight up, I had no interest. And it's not that what Brady had to say wasn't interesting. It's not that I don't like Howard Stern. I'm not like a regular listener, but he does a good job. I'm still bummed. I'm still really upset that he's no longer the quarterback of New England Patriots. And frankly, I didn't want to hear him talk about it for 2 hours. So, yeah. I mean, I went back. I slept through it. I went back. I looked at the highlights. I'm aware of what went on, but I'm not ready to subject myself to that yet. And I guess credit to anybody who is. I'm so far from that point right now.
Yeah, I found it very interesting. I spent my afternoon pretty much while listening to that on SiriusXM, and it was fascinating. It was a glimpse into Tom Brady that you don't really usually get, and it was an interview, you know, conducted by, in my opinion, the best interviewer in the business. And the subject was a guy who is usually pretty mum when he's being interviewed. I think the only other person I'd want to see in a Howard Stern interview, if they were willing to open up, would be Bill Belichick. But it gave you insight, one, into the thought process and leaving New England, and his personal life. The two biggest storylines coming out of that, the two biggest quotes coming out of that was one, he knew he was going to leave New England before the start of last season, validating a lot of what a ton of beat reporters had been, you know, reporting. Like, I think Tommy Curran had made a mention of that, Mike Giardi and guys like that who are in the end with Brady and the Patriots organization. And the other one was just insight into his marriage with Gisele Bündchen, which I know that's not football stuff, but it plays a role when you're the caliber of celebrity that Tom Brady is and you have that power couple that he has with Gisele. That's interesting stuff. Like it or not, you could kind of scoff at it, but it plays a role in how these athletes, how these celebrities kind of plan their future. And for Tom Brady, it was probably a factor. But overall, I was enthralled. I was captivated the entire 2 hours. I've kind of accepted the fact that he's coming back, and I'm kind of looking forward to what's next. So I think that's where you and I differ on this Brady departure. But overall, it did not let down one bit.
I think I've accepted the fact on the Patriots end of things that like they're moving on. I'm not, you know, I'm still kind of treating it like he retired, I guess is where I'm still at. Like I'm still not close. I don't want to close with the fact that he chose to leave. Although now I do know that Giselle certainly deserves a heap of the blame, which I mean had been rumored. But oh no, she does. She does.
I don't think so. Don't
scapegoat her.
Well, no.
You read between the lines there. He left because Bill wanted a certain level of commitment, and she wouldn't let him give that level of commitment. And I'm not going to fault the guy for choosing his family over his job, but she gave him. It sounds like she gave him an ultimatum. Me or Bill, and he chose her. That right, you read between the lines. That's what happened.
I don't.
At least a large chunk of it.
I don't know if that's fair. I think that Belichick was ready to move on regardless of Brady's commitment level, and I think Brady was still committed. He didn't go to OTAs. Is that as big of a deal as people are making it out to be? Maybe it's kind of some insight on how his perspective has changed from now to like 5 years ago. We'll say. But I don't think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think it had more to do with the fact that he's going on year 43 and he had a step back this past season. And he's been looking for the successor to Tom Brady for a while. Is it a factor? Yes. I don't think it's a top factor. I think if Giselle had it her way, he would retire and he's not doing that. So maybe you could call this a compromise.
I think this is their compromise. He's going to go play for a coach who doesn't really care about what he does in a city that doesn't really care if he wins or loses, and so he can take a step back. I think that's the compromise.
I don't think that's fair at all because
winning is not a part of this decision. You don't join the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win.
You are underselling that team, I think, big time. You look at the weapons
they
have.
That team and that coach. I know the team won a Super Bowl in 2002. That is. One of the greatest rosters I think ever put together, pound for pound, era for era. You look at that defense, up and down, superstars, and they had a hell of a smash mouth offense. But you take out that one season, that team has won nothing. And let me ask you this, the great coach, Bruce Arians, right, who's worked with all these great quarterbacks, the hell has he won? What the hell has Bruce Arians won? And he won with Peyton, he won with Ben. Did he make those guys or did those guys make him? Because I watched Jameis the last 4 years. And if that's the kind of quarterback he puts out on his own, when they don't have the kind of talents Peyton has, yeah, he's not a good coach.
Well, he doesn't need
I think I'm woke to this. I think I'm woke to this way before the rest of the NFL. I've been on this bandwagon. Bruce Arians is maybe the most overrated coach in the league. He's not quite Mike Tomlin, but he is up there. The dude hasn't won jack.
Okay, so just a couple things to unpack there. One, Brady is going to come to the season committed. I think if you don't think he's going to be committed this year.
Not the same level he was in New England.
I think, if anything, it's going to be a rejuvenation. And I think that he will come in all out. And beyond that, we talk about the compromise between him and Giselle. I wouldn't be surprised if the compromise was, this is my last year. I know he signed a 2-year deal. He's eyeing 2 years, but who knows? He could be done after this season.
He's still telling people 3 years or whatever.
Okay. Well, so maybe that's the case. But I think when you go into a new environment, when people have attached that line that, you know, you are what you are because of Bill Belichick, which was touched on in that Howard Stern interview, he's looking at this as an opportunity to prove himself. And so I don't think the commitment's going to be questioned. I don't think it should be questioned whatsoever. You look at this roster. This roster has nothing to do with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers of old. Jameis Winston is just not a very good NFL quarterback. I think it's unfair to pin that on Bruce Arians, who hasn't even been the head coach in Tampa Bay for Jameis Winston's entire career. Do we blame the guy who was even there before him? It was what the hell was his name? They were on Hard Knocks. I forget the guy's name. But either way, I think Bruce Arians is a decent coach. He doesn't have to mold the quarterback right now. He has the quarterback. Can he put together a decent offense, which he has done in the past? This is a good team. This is a team that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if Brady can stay healthy and if that elbow is not too much of an issue, they could come out of the NFC in general. They could win that division, which is going to be a tough one this year. I'm not writing that team off at all. And I think that from a football standpoint, this was a smart decision for Tom Brady. I think this was the best place he could have gone outside of New England. That was a legitimate contender to sign him, that is. So I'm more optimistic. I'm actually looking forward to see what he does. He's not retired in my eyes. And guess what? If Tampa Bay makes it further into the playoffs, the Pats don't make the playoffs, or they're out in the first round. Tampa Bay's still around.
I'm telling you, Tampa Bay is not.
I'm
going
to be looking forward to watching that
Bruce Arians' career playoff record. He's 1-2, including a wild card round loss to a 7-win team in 2014.
Yeah, now he has the best playoff quarterback of all time on his team.
The best playoff quarterback doesn't have the best playoff coach. Can he make the it's? And I'm not saying that Belichick made Brady. That's not the argument I'm having here, but I do think that there is some coexistence there. And
sure.
Brady's comebacks aren't necessarily all possible without Belichick. 28-3 doesn't happen without Belichick as much as it doesn't happen without Brady. Can Bruce Arians put his team in that position? I don't believe so.
Well, I mean, and you look at a lot of these games in which the Patriots have made comebacks. A lot of those comebacks, the defense has not gotten enough credit. Making stops, clamping down when it matters. I think that's where you question Bruce Arians and this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. Will that defense be enough to you know, hold back if they need to, you know, make a comeback effort? Who knows? I don't know. This team is a playoff team, in my opinion. This team could go far. They also could not. And it will be telling in a lot of ways. One, is Tom Brady still a really good quarterback? Can he get past the bump, the down year he had this past season? And two, can he win without Bill Belichick? And I think he's got a decent coach. Not the best coach, but he's got a decent coach. Players like to play for that coach. And you know that if a locker room culture really builds up and you got something going, it can lead to a run. It can lead to a lot of things. It can lead to good football.
How's that worked for the Steelers? How has that worked for the Steelers in the last 10 years?
The Steelers have not been great. But I mean, a lot of that has to do with health and a lot of personalities in that locker room that stink. Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown are no picnics. So you have a good leader, and you hope that influence can carry weight in that locker room.
Who's to say Tampa has? We don't know anything about the Tampa personalities. It's Tampa. It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Nobody talks about them. What happens when all of a sudden, you know, if they want Brady wants to take the more safe passes, that's what he's always done. He's a smart quarterback. And all of a sudden, Mike Evans isn't getting his 8 deep ball targets a game. Is he going to be passed? Like, what's going to that's the whole thing is I'm not. There's so many unknowns. Everybody's just writing it off as there's going to be a success. There's major question marks that, yes, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. I will defend that to the death more than anybody. But just as a realist, there's question marks here he's never done with. And people are just assuming a lot of things, like what Bruce Arians is going to be like, what the offense is going to look like. People are just assuming a lot of things are going to work out that aren't necessarily going to work out, especially for a guy who's 43 years old and coming off a down season where he had a serious injury. I think to just assume it's all going to work out is ludicrous, and I think to assume that this decision was made for football reasons is ignoring some basic elements of reality.
Well, but you're also ignoring the fact that Jameis Winston is the worst decision maker in football. Like, the guy threw 30 interceptions last year. You're going from the worst decision maker
in football
to the best.
That is teachable, and Bruce Arians couldn't fix it.
But that's a factor he doesn't have to worry about. Like, that's something that, like, literally is not on his plate. Like, you have – who's the quarterback coach? Is it Leftwich? It's Byron.
But Leftwich, the offensive coordinator. It's just a window into the fact that this is not the New England Patriots. The things that need – with the Patriots, you can assume the things that need to be taken care of are going to get taken care of. That's how they do business. I think a lot of people around New England – don't recognize that that's not standard operating procedure in the NFL. Things get left on the table. Mistakes are made. Things are overlooked. Those not being a problem are specific to the New England Patriots.
Sure.
There are going to be things that are missed. There are going to be corners that are cut in Tampa. That's how Bruce Arians does things. That's how most NFL teams do things. And Brady's not necessarily used to operating in that climate. And I think that's going to have a much bigger impact than people think. Brady being the greatest of all time, that still does not mean he can carry a team. Peyton Manning won one Super Bowl. I know he won two. He won one. He won the one with the Colts. I throw out the one with the Broncos at the end because fair. He was a shell. Come on. Trevor Siemian did as much that year as he did. Peyton Manning won one, probably third greatest quarterback of all time. One, and he had, there were some terrific rosters around him. Edrin James, Hall of Famer, the two Hall of Fame wide receivers, Marvin Harrison, who I think is overrated, and Reggie Wayne, Bob Sanders in the secondary, great player, right? Dwight Freeney, Robert Mathis won one Super Bowl. He won one because the coaching there was a problem while he was there. They had a couple of coaches. Dungy was fine. The guys that came after Dungy were a problem. The coaching matters more than people think because the gap between Belichick and the next closest guy is so much wider than people realize. And I don't think Brady knows that. Or he knows it. If he knows it, then he's okay with having less success. But people are sleeping on how big the gap is between Bill Belichick and number two. Take 2018 for an example. Sean McVay was the second best coach in football that year. Belichick pantsed him in the Super Bowl. I know it was a close game, but you look at the decisions that were made. Bill Belichick pantsed Sean McVay in that Super Bowl. Okay? Pete Carroll, another great coach, top five. Look what Belichick did to him. This is just the reality of it. And I think people are ready for the reality that Bruce Arians, two-time coach of the year, which, by the way, one of those years he lost to a 7-win team in the playoffs at home, lost to a 7-win Carolina Panthers team. The people think that guy is going to be on Belichick's level. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen.
Who says that Bruce Arians is going to go up against Bill Belichick in the playoffs? I don't think that that's going to – I don't think the Patriots are making it to the Super
Bowl
this year.
People are saying, oh, you know, if it's not – I've heard this a number of times. If it's not Belichick, Arians is the best possible coach for him. Like, that's okay. That's fine. But that's like saying, you know, all right, well, if you don't have cancer, coronavirus is the best possible disease you can have. Like, you're still sick.
Sure. I mean, I guess. But let me just ask you this one question.
But that was a bad analogy.
Let me ask you,
what I'm saying.
I understand the point. But let me ask you one question, though. Because I think you're underselling the factor that, you know, Tom Brady is a coach in and of itself. He's going to have more of an impact on that team than the offensive coordinator, Byron Leftwich, will. Like from a leadership standpoint, and I would even argue from a game planning standpoint, because he's probably smarter football wise than any of the secondary.
Byron Leftwich is just scenery at this point. Leftwich is nothing but scenery. Brady's calling the plays.
He's the assistant offensive coordinator behind, and Tom Brady is the offensive coordinator. That's how I'm looking at this situation. I think he's going to have the last say in that game plan. I think Bruce Arians is the type of guy who will give him that type of power, which is maybe one of the reasons Brady wanted to sign on there. But that offense, you're still underselling it. That offense is more skilled than what Tom Brady had to work with this past year. Maybe if Antonio Brown didn't mess up and stayed on that roster, that wouldn't be the case. But we all know how that transpired. He has targets. He has weapons. And I think that he knows how to use weapons, as we've seen in the past. So he should be optimistic. I think the NFL shouldn't be counting out this team. I also think that they shouldn't be, you know, throwing them in the Super Bowl already. You had to see where Tom Brady is at because that is a question mark. But that was a good spot for him to go. And it is a legitimate football team with Tom Brady this season. So I'm looking forward to see them play. I'm curious. Maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, he's going into this year with less commitment than he's gone into past seasons. I don't see that to be the case. I think it's going to be the opposite effect. I think he's going to come into it rearing to go, ready to go, and he's going to be somebody who's very motivated.
I mean, that's all well and good, but and yeah, Brady can certainly help, and if he's healthy, the offense should look fine. But what happens when they play the Saints? Is Tom Brady the one game planning for Drew Brees? Bruce Arians is 1-5 all time against Drew Brees. And they're going to have to beat the Saints. They have to beat the Saints. There's no way around.
The defense is the question mark. I think that more so. I think the offense is going to do a phenomenal job this year. That's just my gut instinct. That's what I think. The defense.
But the thing with that team, here's what you have to remember about that team. They don't have much of a running game, and they have a pretty bad offensive line. If they get behind and they have to throw, Brady's going to get the crap beat out of them.
Well, he's also the best pocket passer. Like he knows how to move around. So if there's anyone who can mitigate that problem, it's Tom Brady. Again, these are concerns for sure, and he's had the benefit of Dante Scardecchia and an unbelievable offensive line for the majority of his NFL career. But he's also helped out a bit, and he's not going to be as mobile as a Jameis Winston, but he will be better within the pocket than Jameis Winston, and he'll probably make less mistakes. And that was a 500 football team. They could win 3 to 4 more games this season, I think. And
The whole thing that this isn't, people are talking about it being an automatic Super Bowl for the Bucs, and this was the perfect marriage, and you know, Brady and Arians are a great fit in that offense. There are glaring holes there that people are just ignoring, and that's what's bugging me. Don't act like this was a football decision. This was not a football decision. The right football decision, purely football, was to stay in New England. He had a better chance to win in New England than he does in Tampa. The numbers will be better in Tampa. But if it's about a ring, New England was the better decision. So this was about, A, making Giselle happy, and B, pumping his numbers and having more of it, being able to have more of a voice to do things like the Howard Stern show so he can promote the TV12 brand. That's what this was. He has his 6 rings. He's apparently good with that. I hate to see it, but he's earned that right.
In all fairness,
don't act like this was some X's and O's football decision, because it wasn't.
In all fairness, there was only one mention of TB12 in that interview, and it was like in passing. I think they set the record straight.
Look at his Instagram now and all the stuff he's doing. You're going to start getting TB12.
Sure. And there's nothing wrong. I don't think Belichick had a problem with that as much as he did with Alex Guerrero being in the team facilities and having as much of a say. But I will say this. The one takeaway from the interview is that Tom Brady – I think a lot of people who dislike Tom Brady will sympathize with him, will like him. He came across as very likable. And people who, dislike the Patriots will understand that that they weren't at fault here really either. He did a really good job of walking that line of, listen, this was just a mutual agreement at the end of the day. I have a lot of respect for Belichick, no animosity. And I thought he handled it as he usually does, with a ton of class. It was interesting. There was a lot of insight there. And for me, it was like Patriots porn. I really enjoyed it. I understand, you know, the wound's still a little fresh. You don't want to get out there and expose yourself to something that's going to, you know, extend the trauma. But it was a fascinating interview conducted by, you know, the best guy in the business. So listen to it. You got to give it a week. Listen to it. Listen to it in full. I think you will enjoy it.
Meanwhile, there's a fake tweet going around. Barry got, like, the CBS New York account that the Jets just signed Colin Kaepernick. They did not, as far as I know.
Yeah, but I saw another one that the Patriots signed Cam Newton to a 1-year, $5 million prove-it deal, which was also false. So.
Oh, I want nothing to do with Cam Newton. Absolutely nothing to do with Cam Newton. That guy is so watched. Had a great career. Arguably the greatest college quarterback of the decade. Take him over Tebow, certainly. Yeah, because he was the end of the 2000s. Yeah, take him over Tebow, certainly. But, I want nothing. He's done.
Go on. We don't need to get into that, actually.
No, he had one good year, but he needs to play physically, and he can't play physically anymore because his body's beat up. That's just what it is.
I think the one benefit is he's had a lot of time off, so if there was a year he was going to come back somewhat healthy, it would be this upcoming year. But, yeah, I want the Patriots to roll with Stidham at this point. I think most people feel that way.
Sure. Unless Tua falls, but even then, like, if he's falling that far because of injury, and these are the reports now, right, that he's going to, like, plummet, and he's failed a couple physicals, even if he's going to fall that far because of injury, in that case, I don't know if I want him. Do you want the most important position on the field to be that unreliable? And again, I love Tua. I'm an Alabama guy. Everybody knows it. They would have won the title this year if he'd stayed healthy. But that in itself is my point. The guy's very undersized. He could barely take the hits in college. Is he going to be able to stay on the field in the NFL? I don't want a quarterback where I have to wonder every single game if he's going to finish it. Tua rarely finished games in college. Either he got hurt or they pulled him because they were worried about him getting hurt. But he rarely finished games in college. So yeah. I'm almost at the point, and again, I love the guy. And they would have won the national championship this year, and he would have won the Heisman if he'd stayed healthy. But yeah. He's not worth the risk at the next level.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I could see them taking a flyer on him, but when, you know, how often does Bill Belichick draft the quarterback in the first round? So yeah, maybe if he drops into the second round, I mean, who knows? But
that, I think it's more realistic. If he's there like 34, 35, maybe they trade up to get him.
Yeah. But I don't think they're spending a first round pick on him. And when the physical aspect of it is even more muddied because of the coronavirus. So I wonder, you know, how much stock people, these teams are putting into that in the first place. So we'll see. We'll see. It's interesting. You know more about Tua than I do. But he obviously had a phenomenal year, and he was on pace to top what he did his junior or sophomore season this year. But, you know, obviously he got hurt. That's the biggest concern with him.
All right, let's move it on here. Close up real quick. The MLB has a plan, according to Jeff Passan, reported this, I don't know, yesterday, 2 days ago, they're all running together, that they're going to play all their games in Arizona in closed stadiums. Umpires are going to have to stand 6 feet back. The players won't be in the dugout. They'll be in the stands. They'll be 6 feet away with each other. Players are going to be sequestered away from their families in hotel rooms and whatnot. I want sports back. I don't want to back that bad. That just sounds miserable. I don't want to be I don't want sports to remind me how crappy everything else is. And if I watch that, it's just going to be a reminder to me of that.
Yeah, I just don't know how you pull all that stuff off. I can't even envision it. Like, I can, but it does not seem right. You're going to put players in the stands, have them 6 feet apart. So what about when there's a play at the plate? What about the first baseman? When, you know, there's a runner on first,
right.
That player doesn't matter. So every first base in the MLB is going to be subject to coronavirus. And every player that gets on base, the pitchers are going to be the only ones who it does not affect. And even them, they're touching the ball every
time. That was one of the rules. No mound meetings.
But they're touching the same baseball.
They're going to be allowed to have mound meetings.
They're touching the same baseballs. Everyone's cross-contaminating. It's like it makes no sense. I think this is like just a way for them to act like, see, public, we're doing a great job, you know, America. Let's go on. But like you really break it down. This does nothing. You're still in the same venue. You're still like it's still a gathering of, you know, at least 35 people. You include coaching staff and then other, you know, ballpark staff. Like you're – It's not going to be within the code. So I mean, I'll take it. I mean, I want sports right now. So I'll definitely take it.
I want sports back normal. I just want it back normal. I don't want to do a bunch of, and the last thing I want is for the 2020 season to start affecting the 2021 season. I like to take the NBA and NHL, for example. The NBA is doing this thing where they're going to play horse, and that's fine. Like that's whatever. I might watch it. I might not. It's something, but I would rather them just bag their season now, either award the first place team the championship, you don't award a championship, however you want to do it. Bag the season now, and let's start fresh in October. I would rather that than they say, okay, we're going to play the playoffs from July to September, and then the season's going to start in January. Like, no, don't do that. Do whatever. At this point right now, to me, if I'm a commissioner, I am making sure that the 2021 season goes on without any issues. That is my goal right now, more so than saving this season. That is where I would be looking because I you just got to get back to normalcy, and that's the way to do it. And then so what? So you push the 2021 season back, and then 2022 gets affected and whatever. Like, you're not going to be able to play all the games that were supposed to be played. That's just not going to happen. And I think that – The NBA has said, there was a report the other day that they have shifted the conversation from how to restart to what the financial implications would be if everything just was canceled. And I'll give them credit for that. I think that's the right way to go at this point. I really do. I have no problem if the next sporting event we see, right, the next real games are NFL opening week. I think that that's okay. I would honestly be okay with that. It means that from that point, we hit the ground running and there's no more interruptions, I would take that.
And I don't even know if that's going to happen. I mean, it sounds like you had Santa Clara County, which I believe is where the 49ers are, say, yeah, we're not getting a sporting event here until, you know, Thanksgiving, which seems extreme.
Here's what I'm worried about. And here's why I think these two things tie in. And then I'll let you get to your point, but I just want to tie this together. Mm-hmm. And I think I said this last week. If baseball comes back, that's reinstating a sense of normalcy. And I know I said I want to get back to normal, so this is going to sound a little counterintuitive, but if baseball comes back, does the general public look at that and say, things are coming back? You know, oh, maybe I can go over to my friend's house to watch the game. What can it harm? I'll go over to my friend's house to watch the game. But then you got to stop on the way to your friend's house to pick up beer. And then, you know, so like, don't, I think the majority of people or enough people are dumb enough to see, even in that limited sample, even in that limited version in Arizona, people see baseball come back and say, sports are back, we're good, it's over. You know, who cares what the government says? Sports are back, we're fine, we can go about our business. Like, are people going to go, like, just stand outside the stadium? Are people going to go stand on the street outside the stadium? Like, that's why I think these leagues have responsibility where even if they can play in a reduced capacity like that, just wait. Just, people need to see you waiting, because when you come back, people are going to start getting back to their usual whatever. And then we're going to get a second wave of this thing, and then we lose a whole nother year.
Yeah, I mean, this is I don't. It's a complicated issue. Like, how dumb are people? Is really the question. And
you have to assume they're dumb.
Yeah, you do. You do. But we also have to get back to normal, and we can't let those dumb people ruin it for the rest of us. So I think we will get something, and it probably will be a little bit rushed, and it will be a weird version. I also think, you know, let's just take it league by league. I think the NBA, they could put something in their next CBA and just do one right now that changes their season. I know they've wanted to start in December or January and go through, you know, July and August, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. This would be an excuse to get that ball rolling, and it would be an excuse for us to have, you know, a season, you know, to resume the season later this summer, which would be great. Baseball seems like it might not happen. Who knows? This version seems weird. It seems bizarre. And whoever comes out on top at the end of the season will always have an asterisk next to their team name. So, like, is it even worth it? But you also have the collateral damage to suspending an entire season. It's extremely complicated. It's very frustrating to think about, because you know that this is going to have implications that last for the next 5 to 10 years, the very least. So I don't know what the answer is. My heart tells me, you know, let's get back to playing sports. But my gut tells me that's not the right thing to do for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned. And I also don't like the idea, although I take it, I don't like the idea of the sport being changed. I don't like 7-inning games. I think you just need to speed up the existing games. I don't want 7-inning doubleheaders. I don't want an automated umpire. Like, I know that a lot of people like that sort of thing and think that those are changes that need to come anyway. But it bothers me. It does bother me. And you make a great point. It's a simple reminder that we're stuck in this dilemma, and we're going to be stuck in this dilemma for a while. So I don't know. Either way, I think people are losing their mind. I think if this goes so much longer, we're going to need some type of escape, even if it is a crappy version of what we're used to. So in short, bring it on. Bring it on. Give me anything besides the horse tournament. I don't want the horse tournament, but bring back sports. Bring
but
back.
Like, who cares? Nobody's saying that's like a replacement.
Yeah, no, I get that, but I'm not going to watch it regardless. I find it's like the Big Three. Like, people act like the Big Three was going to be this fun thing. I had no interest in it. Most people didn't. It's a bunch of, you know, I just don't care. I don't care about horse and games that I played when I was 12. So, which was baseball. I do care about that, but I don't. I want sports back. I want competition. I want legitimate competition. Even if it means that it's not going to be the same, I'll take it. I'll honestly take it. I don't want it. I prefer something else, but I'll take it.
All right. I think that's as good a place of any. We'll see what happens next week, because I mean, this has all changed so much week to week that maybe this horse tournament will happen next week. Maybe things will be bad. Like, who knows? Maybe we'll be pushed back another month. So. Yeah. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.